أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيد الأنام، سيدنا ومولانا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا، أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening the return of our Imam, please recite the salawat. We were talking about the path to salvation that can only come from the Ahlul Bayt. The Ahlul Bayt, or the intermediaries between Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the creation, between Him and us. There are other intermediaries between them and us that take care of our basic material needs, that we should see as intermediaries, not as independent causes. And we spoke about that, so I won't take time repeating that. But it is an important understanding we need to develop further and further. We forget. We keep forgetting. We keep thinking the various elements within this universe that have an impact on our lives are independently doing so, and therefore what we do towards them is we look at them as though they are independent and we treat them independently. In other words, if we have to do something wrong to get to that cause because we have a need, we'll do that wrong, because we think the good comes, our need will be fulfilled through that cause, through that medication, through that whatever it is. We'll commit a sin to get it because we think that is going to give it to me. We don't see God is giving it to me, and that's only an intermediary. But the Ahlul Bayt are intermediaries that give us something that no other intermediary can give, and that is salvation, prosperity in this world and in the hereafter. We mentioned that the prosperity in this world and the hereafter are two sides of the same coin. They come together. They're not independent of one another according to the Ahlul Bayt. We don't have that. It's not like the path to prosperity in this world is one, the path to prosperity in the hereafter is a different one. You need to do things that bring you prosperity in this world that are not going to bring you prosperity in the hereafter. And you need to do things that are going to bring you prosperity in the hereafter that will not bring you prosperity in this world. This is not the view of the Ahlul Bayt. Another thing that was added was personal prosperity. I as an individual cannot reach the goal of my creation, cannot reach prosperity as an individual without taking into account my family and greater society. You cannot, we cannot, a person's prosperity is tied to the prosperity of the family and the society they live in. If you want to move in that direction, you have to help with your family and your society to move in that direction as well. If you're careless of those two, then you are not going to be able to acquire prosperity. So this is another point that was mentioned. Then we talked about what exactly do we mean when we say, all right, if God gives us the guidance towards prosperity, if the Ahlul Bayt are the intermediaries that deliver that to us, we get it from the Ahlul Bayt. How to acquire prosperity in this world and in the hereafter? What does that exactly mean? Does that mean we're going to learn how to design cars by the Ahlul Bayt? Are we going to learn how to design structures by the Ahlul Bayt? Are we going to learn how to develop political systems through the words of the Ahlul Bayt, the details of it? Are we going to learn how to develop economic systems? They're going to be telling us the details of that. We said, well, when we say the Ahlul Bayt deliver that to us, they have said to us what Islam that we're looking at, that intermediary, that is going to help us out, is a combination of aql and naql. The Ahlul Bayt speak to our intellect, with our intellect, together with revelation, we're able to reach that. Islam isn't words without our internal intellect that is the recipient of that guidance. Guidance comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to our intellects. It comes through words as well. All right, so that's where we're getting that. That was an important other point that was mentioned. Then we said, how does, and this is where we're going to have to continue the discussion, when God is going to be providing us the guidance to prosperity, how does He do that? We expect, right? We expect when God is going to provide us the guidance for prosperity, whether it's for this world or the hereafter, we're going to get it in a very simple statement. Okay, do this now, today, this minute, you need to do this. Next minute, do that. The minute after that, do the third. Okay. Everything is planned out by God. He tells you, do all of these things. This is what we expect. We said, this is not how God guides. This is a wrong way of guiding. If God were to provide instructions in that way, we wouldn't reach prosperity. That would not get us to prosperity. So how does He guide us? The first thing we said was He gives us direction. Overall direction. Overall direction. And that overall direction is that, look, you have the Akhirah as your end goal. That is where you're trying to get to. The dunya is the path to the Akhirah. You're looking for prosperity in this world, not independently though. Not looking at it and saying, this is only what I want. This is the path through which you're able to get to the Akhirah. So your direction is the Akhirah. The dunya is the path to it. You got to get that straight. Plenty of times people have had that mistake, have made that mistake. Communities, societies have made that mistake. Currently, the society we live in is making this mistake. And you can see, as we progress, as we move along, we're seeing more and more clearly that this approach not only will not provide us prosperity in the hereafter, it will not provide us prosperity in this world either. You might temporarily in this world have it well, but you're not going to continuously have it well. You're going to lose that. It's temporary. It's a mirage. You move in that direction. When you get there, you realize, no, it wasn't there. You got it wrong. The direction. So number one in that guidance, direction. Secondly, that we started and we didn't finish, is that He describes where we're headed. I want to open this up a bit more, so we understand what this guidance is that is coming to us from God. If we don't understand it right, we're not going to take it on board. That's what happens. If we don't realize what this line here is, if we don't know what the purpose of it is, then we're not going to use it accordingly. Very simple, very basic. If you get the instruction manual to how to set up this new device that you've got, if you don't understand why, look, it says when you want to use it, first have it plugged up for this many hours, for example. Okay. You don't understand what that's for, you say, well, you know, you don't take it seriously. You start using it and you destroy the battery. There's a reason for it. You got to understand why that's there. If we don't understand why this is there, why this guidance is being given to us, then we're not going to take it as we should. The description of where we're going to get to, what is that exactly? Why is it important? Look, if you want to establish, salam alaikum, if you want to establish an organization, you want to establish a group of people coming together, and you want to get from point A to point B, you have a goal, you have an objective. You come together, you form a team, you want to get there. What is one of the first things that they tell you you need to have? Salah salawat, please. What is it that you need to have in order to be successful, whatever the activity is that you're trying to do? They say you need to have a vision. Okay. You need to have a vision. What exactly do you want to do? You need to have a vision. If you don't have a vision, if you don't know where you're headed, a clear description of where you're headed, and you don't remind yourself of what that is, what's going to happen is you're either going to stop moving altogether. This is important. Let me give an example for this. Sometimes brothers and sisters form with together. They come together. They form a group. Whether it's youth trying to form a youth group to have activities. They realize that the state of affairs in their community isn't where it should be. They realize that. So we got to do something. All right, let's do something. Call a few people up, come over the center, someone's house, somewhere. Okay, let's get together, do something. We want to make things better. Okay, first session, you get together, you have your chips, your salsa, your whatever, and then have a few conversations. And then next thing you know, like, okay, let's invite a speaker, or let's invite this person or the other person. Or let's have this person come and talk. Or let's one of us, every week somebody gives a presentation. Okay, so we want to change things. What are we going to do? We're going to have some presentation. We're going to have a speaker come over. Okay, so you do that for a few weeks, for a few months. Then what? What are you going to do next? How do you continue? What exactly are you going to be doing? That's when you start having your rifts. That's when people start having their fights, their arguments. People lose the motivation. This is the first thing that we're saying. People lose motivation. Like, okay, we got to change. We got to do something. When you don't set a vision for yourself, one of the things that happens is that you lose motivation. You forget why you even wanted to do this. Oh, what's the purpose of this? And I've heard this God knows how many times. You see a group of brothers and sisters forming a youth group or forming an organization. A few years down the line, a number of the people that are in it are questioning, why do we even have this? Okay. You don't have a vision, right? You lose any type of motivation or reason to move forward. The other thing that could happen if you don't have a vision is that you're going to deviate. You still have the motive. You're motivated. You have the drive. You want to move. You want to do things. But because you didn't have a vision, what's going to happen is you wanted to move in that direction. But because you didn't have a vision, gradually you started moving in this direction. That's another thing that happens. Movements, youth groups, organizations, they start diverting. They start deviating from the path that they set out. They wanted to move towards Allah, they start moving towards shaitan. They wanted to be active and involved in the community, to do good work, to bring prosperity to the community. They end up forming bodies that become the means through which the government is influencing the community. We have these examples. These are real examples. I'm not mentioning names, but I've seen all of this happen. People coming together, good intentions, wanting to do good, helping the community, prosperity, taqwa, all of these good things. If you don't have the right vision, what's going to happen is you're going to deviate if you keep the momentum, if you keep that motivation, if you keep the drive going. You still want to move in the right direction, but gradually you start losing that focus, you move in a different direction. That's why a vision that has very defined descriptions of what you're going to be arriving at becomes very important. Recite a salawat, please. Not having a vision, an ambiguous vision, isn't really a vision. What is meant by a vision is that you're going to pinpoint 4 or 5, 10 or 12, whatever number you need, okay, that is going to be the defining qualities of where you're going to get to. So every time, every once in a while, you can check, do we get there, do we not, are we moving in that direction, or are we not? If it's ambiguous, if it's not clear, you don't have those defined qualities, those defined features, how it's supposed to look like, then again, you say you have a vision. Yeah, we're moving towards Allah. This is how we're moving towards Allah. We need to bring change to the American policy in Washington. Let's go over there. Okay, that's how we're going to... But then the changes that you want to make, you realize that they're not making changes to American policy. They're starting to make changes in their Islam. They start making changes in the community that they're coming from. Having very defined qualities, this is how it's supposed to be. So when Islam gives us these qualities of how the community of believers are supposed to be like, or what a prosperous community is going to be like, those definitions, those boundaries, those guidelines become extremely important. They're what is going to allow us to keep going in the right direction. If that hadn't been given to us, if they don't describe to us, okay, you're moving from here, you're looking for prosperity, this is where you're supposed to get. It has these qualities. You don't get that, you start moving in the wrong direction. So when you get those defined properties and features from Islam, Islam is giving you the vision. This is very important then, from here on, looking at some of those qualities that have been mentioned, for those who are looking to move in that direction seriously. Those who've been having this question of, okay, what should the vision be? Here we go. Islam has given us what the vision is supposed to be like. What our vision is supposed to be. Recite a salawat, please. We started off with qist, social justice. A society that the believers are living in, a prosperous society that believers are living in, one of the qualities that has got to be there is social justice. Social justice. If we start making policies, if we start introducing activities, models that are going to push us away from social justice, they're going to start creating a gap between people. You'll start having a wealthier class, an upper class, a lower class, a middle class, and you start, you know, those policies, those decisions, those systems, those laws that you put into place, that culture that you develop starts widening the gap between these classes. Okay. You have an upper class that owns most of what there is to own, a middle class that has a much smaller portion, and then you have a lower class which has loads of people in it, but all together they don't own even half as much as maybe sometimes one of those individuals in the upper class. Doing anything that's going to lead to social injustice, to there being classes, Islam doesn't agree with this idea of having an upper class, a middle class, a lower class, the way, you know, this is not something that is Islamic. There's got to be social justice. So this is one, since I talked about it yesterday, I'm not going to repeat it today. That's one. The second quality that is a defined quality, again, it's one of those boundaries, it's one of those things that you're looking at that's going to define your vision. If at any point you realize you're not moving towards that, you got to correct yourself. You got to correct the direction of your family. You got to correct the direction of your community. You got to look and see what is it that we're doing that's causing this. I'm going to talk more, hopefully. I think we're going to get to it on the last night, Wednesday night, about our thinking in this process. But right now, you got to look back at what we're doing, how we're running our activities, for example, in a community center, how our behavior towards one another is in at home, in a family, that's causing this. What is it that's causing this problem, that's causing us to move away from this? So the second quality that we're looking for, it might seem it's pretty basic. I've heard it God knows how many times, but you didn't look at it in this way. We didn't see it as part of our vision. What is it? Brotherhood. The community of believers is supposed to have brotherhood as one of its key elements and features. People in a Muslim community should feel close to one another. They should feel so close. Have you heard the descriptions of the time of the coming of the Imam of our time? Ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Why do you think those descriptions are given? Why do you think we're told this is how it's going to be? Because these are defining factors. It's telling you and I, you need to move towards it. It says that people are so close to one another, they know one another so well, and they feel so comfortable with one another, if they have a need, they'll just go take it from their brother. And they know that brother of theirs is absolutely okay with it. In other words, they know. I don't know if you've come across people like that. They know. If I have a need and I didn't go and take from that brother of mine, if he comes to know that I did that, he'll be so upset at me. It'll be flipped. See, right now we can't even imagine that. As soon as you say that, like, oh, so theft is going to be okay at that time. You get to go and take whatever you want from whoever you want. No, there's so much closeness, there's so much brotherhood, that if you had a need, because he wasn't around to ask him, you didn't take. When they come to come home and learn about this, they will be extremely upset at you. You should have just come in and taken it. That's how close people are supposed to be. Brotherhood. This notion that you don't even know your neighbor, you don't know even your family members. I was thinking, brothers and sisters, recite salawat, please. You know, the Holy Quran tells us about the mushrikeen. One of the problems of the mushrikeen, the community of the mushrikeen, one of the problems that God talks about in the Holy Quran is this. وَيَقْطَعُونَ If I get the wording right, مَا أُمِرُوا أَن يُسَالُوا Something along those lines in the Holy Quran we have in Surah Baqarah is one of them. There's other places as well. What God has told you to connect, you break that bond. The jahiliyyah of the time of the Holy Prophet, one of the problems, see the defining factor of a prosperous community, you're supposed to be close. If you're cut off, there's a problem there. If family members that are supposed to be even closer with one another, they are separated. They don't communicate. Very wrong. Okay. Unacceptable. You're not going to have a prosperous community. Individuals within that community, you're not going to see prosperity. You got to be close. Your hearts have got to be close. So one of the points that the Holy Quran raises as a description of a Jahili Arab era, the time of the Jahiliyyah, one of the qualities of it is people are not close. Even family members that would naturally be closer are breaking that bond with one another. You know what I find really interesting? And I find interesting is that we're living in a modern age of Jahiliyyah. I keep seeing resemblances. It's the same exact thing. All right? I was just talking to a brother who's become Muslim. He's not, and today I don't see him. Alhamdulillah, he's been coming. I asked him, so you have any siblings? I have a brother, but I'm not talking to him. Become Muslim, inshallah, that's going to be corrected as well. But he's a reaver. Like this is baggage that comes from, I'm not talking, I have a brother living in the same city. I don't communicate with him. I'm looking at my mother's side of the family. Some of them, no communication at all. I don't even care. I was in California. One of the brothers was telling me about his mother was a revert to Islam. So his mother's side of the family is not Muslim. If I remember it correctly, when his grandfather passed away, well, obviously they're very sad. He wasn't Muslim, but he was their grandfather. But his aunt, the conversation they had, whatever their grandfather's name was, their aunt, the daughter of this man, is telling her husband, I'm putting the name Bill. I don't think his name was Bill, whatever. Bill died. He dropped dead. Your father passed away. Bill dropped dead. This is Jahiliyyah. You expect prosperity? No. Ahlul Bayt say, one of the defining qualities of a prosperous community is brotherhood. Not only are relatives supposed to be close with one another, everyone in society has got to be. You should be able to go to the store over there, have a really nice conversation, genuine. Not that they smile in your face just to get your business. Okay. Now that's a trick. It's a tactic. Okay. You want business? Put a big smile on your face. They smile at you and they sell you the worst car they have in their dealership. Okay. No, real, genuine brotherhood. You don't want anything bad for that other person. Genuinely. So this is another defining element in a prosperous community according to the Ahlul Bayt. The next one that I want to mention, I hope I can get the point across to all of us. I hope God gives me the words to describe this well. How many have we set up to this point? What number are we on? Anyone remember? How many qualities did we mention? Two, right? justice, and the second one was brotherhood, right? Social justice, and second was brotherhood. Third, ma'rifa, okay, knowledge, understanding. This requires a bit of explanation. One of the things that this means is that the people in a prosperous society are going to be learned and educated. They're going to be not only learned and educated in the sense of being told certain concepts, certain teachings, and taking that in, memorizing it, but they're looking to develop knowledge. They're increasing their knowledge. They're looking towards discovering what is covered from their eyes, what is not seen, what they don't know of, what they are unaware of. Everyone in that community, in that society, in that country, hopefully the global government of Islam, whoever lives in that, this is the description. They're going to be progressing intellectually, gaining knowledge, developing knowledge. These are two different things. Okay. Unfortunately, for a couple of centuries at least, the believers at best have gained knowledge. Okay. At best. In other words, the best of us, from this perspective, have been those that have gone to the university, have gotten that education, learned what they needed to learn, and that's it. The scientists that develop knowledge, you don't see too many of them being Muslim. Muslims as a community trying to develop knowledge, further a certain science, push the wheel forward in it, have new discoveries, contribute towards it. No. Yeah, you'll find a name of a Muhammad or an Ali or some Islamic name there, but it's an institution that has nothing to do with Islam, and the only thing usually that they have of Islam is just the name. In other words, if you're looking for scientific development, if you're looking for the development of technologies, you don't go to the Muslim world, unfortunately. Muslims go to the Western world. They gain that knowledge. The ones that do good in this field, right? The ones that do good, because a lot of us still, it's the opportunities there, we don't even take that. But this is not what we're talking about. This is not enough. Furthering knowledge, developing it, doing research, having new findings, developing theories. This is one of the qualities. This is one of, or part of what we mean when we say a defining quality of a prosperous society or community is ma'rifa, knowledge. There's another thing that is very important as well. Let me, before I mention that second point, on that first point, I stressed on developing knowledge with regards to the sciences, technologies, and so on and so forth. Believers shouldn't only be good physicians. They should be in the labs. They should be developing those sciences further. As Muslims, Muslim institutions need to do that. Muslim countries need to do this. Of course, alhamdulillah, the Islamic Republic is doing this. In some of the fields, they've advanced very well. They've had a jump. And that's because Again, we're using that as an example to say that this is what Islam says. It's not like, oh, Islam says something else. Islam talks about prosperity for the hereafter. This world, you don't deal with that. But going back to the point that I wanted to add, Islamic knowledge is similar. Understanding. A Muslim should be studying. Sometimes I feel terrible about us, about the state of affairs of the Muslimin. You go on a flight, you see all the non-Muslims, they got either a book on their Kindle or their iPad on their whatever, or they just bought a book and they read it throughout the trip. They're constantly reading. Okay. You see a believer, they either have a video game or a movie on. Okay. Read. The Prophet of God, God says to him, Iqra, read. And think. Read and think about religion as well. You don't have to go to the Hausa to do this. They're like, okay, you have certain individuals you send to Qom, they become the mullahs, they become the mulanas or whatever, they're supposed to do that. We just come and listen.
Okay.
No, you got to think. If we don't start developing this, then our community will not prosper. It's not possible. Everyone within the community has got to develop understanding. Learn, think, read, think about it. Don't just read, okay, I went through it, I read the whole book. Really? List me 5 points you learned from that. How many points did you learn from that? Explain it to me, please. You listen to a lecture afterwards. What'd you gain from that? Did you learn anything? What did you learn? Have you ever thought about taking notes? Write down and think. One of the customs of the houses of the seminary is that you go and listen to the lecture of your teacher. You're supposed to write down the notes. Afterwards, you got to go back to your notes. Think about it. Analyze. Categorize the information that's been given to you. You're supposed to do that. When you read a book, listen to a lecture, think about what is being said, connect it to the previous knowledge you had, analyze. Without this, we're not moving in the right direction. That's where we're headed. That's where we're supposed to be headed. There's something else as well. Knowledge and ma'rifah. In a community of believers, in a society governed by Islam, you have an Islamic government of some form. Okay. Human beings or social beings, you live together, there's got to be a body that governs. You don't have any people that live without government. There's going to be government. According to Islam, one of the defining factors of a prosperous community of believers that has a government is that the people are informed of what is going on. They're informed of what is going on. They are trying to learn it and they are informed. In other words, in the community of believers, you don't have 5 people ruling over the rest. The rest are just taking care of their own business, not caring about anything, not involved, not aware. I don't know who this guy is, who that guy is, what are their policies, how does this government run? I don't know any of that. These people rule. I go to work. I make money. That's how they make money. This is the way it seems many of us perceive this. I make money by going to my office, going to work, wherever it is. The president makes his money in that way as well. No awareness, no understanding on my part. The other thing is no understanding given from the other parts. There's a huge difference between a prosperous society and the definition of Islam and what is perceived as prosperous in a non-Islamic ideology. The reality of the situation, brothers and sisters, is that politicians don't want the general public to know what's going on. Right? You got to know this. You as Muslimin have got to know this. The politicians don't want you to care. They don't want you to give a damn about what's going on. They want you to just worry about your personal life, your family life. This is why news that is supposed to be giving you what's happening in politics, what's happening in the daily lives of people, what's affecting that, what's the economy looking like, you've got to have real information there. The way it's set up, if there is real information, which there is, partially real information is there. It is along with a lot of misinformation, but that's not even the problem. That's not even the problem. Problem is when you go to that news website, a lot of things that are absolutely unimportant. They have nothing to do with my life. They're all over the place. Okay. It's entertainment. Look, news is a form of entertainment. That's how they've made it. News is a form of entertainment. So you're going on there, you're thinking you're looking at news, you're watching news. You can watch CNN 24/7. What are you going to get from it? How much information do you get? Forget about the misinformation. Let's say there's no misinformation. But that information isn't coming out. They're wasting your time with a bunch of baloney. This is how you can rule over a people. That's what Muawiyah did. Muawiyah's tactic is the same. He kept people of Sham busy with things that are unimportant. We'll take care of this. You guys keep busy with your personal lives. In an Islamic society, both the government and the people, the government gives that information, involves the people, and the people need to be involved. If either of those two parties isn't doing their share, then it's not going to be a prosperous society. Follow the speeches of the leader of the Islamic Republic. There's negotiations going on. He's giving the people why we're making this decision, explaining and telling people, look, have debates about this. Open debates. Politicians have to go to universities, have open debates and discussions with people, university students, professors. Everyone, the talk of the street is negotiations. What's going on? Here, people are, the culture is such that you don't really care. You don't really care. That's how you're raised. There's people that care about this and the masses that don't care about this. Ma'arifa, understanding. We need to understand what direction our society is headed. Who is making decisions that are affecting my life, affecting my family's life, affecting my community? I need to know that and I need to contribute. Isn't that the meaning of democracy? That's supposed to be the meaning of democracy. This is why some of our ulama, Ayatollah Khomeini particularly, said, look, democracy actually comes from Islam. Some people say democracy and Islam are not compatible. No, democracy is compatible with Islam. It's actually, according to him, coming from Islam, coming from the teachings of prophets. It's liberal democracy, which is not a real democracy, that is not compatible with Islam. It's liberalism that we have a problem with. And as you can see, it's becoming more and more evident that this is not a democracy. So one of the key elements that defines a community, a prosperous society, which means that we should be moving in that direction, is ma'rifa. All of what I mentioned are various dimensions of ma'rifa. People have got to be understanding and knowledgeable of the material context they live in. They need to know the social, political context they live in. They need to know what God tells them about this entire system, the cosmos, the relationship between God and us in the hereafter and all of that. That full package is something that believers should have. This means we got to move towards it, right? This is how many? This is number three. Recite a salawat, please. There's a couple more, but we won't be able to fully explain them in this session, so I'll leave them for, inshallah, tomorrow evening. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, by the rights of the Ahlul Bayt, to enlighten our hearts with the light of the Qur'an. Give us the ma'rifah of the Qur'an and the Ahlul Bayt. Help us, give us the courage to move in the direction that they have illuminated for us. Ya Allah, hasten the return of our Imam. Help us become his true and close companions. Protect those helping the cause of Islam, especially those sacrificing their lives to protect Islam and the Muslims in the various regions that are dealing with conflicts. Ya Allah, protect our maraja and protect our leader. Ya Allah, forgive us all of our sins. Forgive our parents, our relatives, all believers of their sins. Ya Allah, we all have hajat and needs. By the rights of the Ahlul Bayt and the Qur'an in this blessed month, we ask you to grant all of us and all believers their hajat, their needs, their requests, especially the ill from amongst us, for them to be cured, and those who are suffering to be relieved of the sufferings that they're dealing with. And we ask Allah to relieve all the people of the world of the oppressions they're facing. Bin Nabiya wa alih rahimallah man qara al-fatihata ma'a salawat.
Brother Ismail is going to lead the Salat on the women's side. So we'll need five volunteers to go with Brother Ismail. And Sheikh Hamza Sadegar is going to lead the Salat on the men's side. Now I'll request sisters to vacate Hall A so we can remove the partition for the Jamaat Salah. Brother Brian, you can use this.
سبحان الله والحمد لله ولا إله إلا الله.